The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you so much. Boy, I felt this last week and a half has been unbelievably sleep depriving in my house. We had the World Series that kept me up way too late, and then we had election night. And I never intended to stay up that late, but next thing you know, it was 2 a.m, and I'm like, my gosh, this is unbelievable what's happening. But if you had listened to my show maybe several weeks ago, I said I really think that Donald Trump is going to win. I mean, I said it here, and I believed it. And the reason I believed it was because I knew I knew people from around the country. When I would visit different places, I would ask. I would talk with them. I would ask the bartender, the wait staff, the cab drivers, the bellman, anyone and everyone that would talk about it. You know, what are they sick and tired about? And they never would admit to voting for Donald Trump. But what they were saying was indicating that they did not necessarily want the same old, same old. So that gave me that indication. And then I started talking with some other people that are really highly educated people, smart people, that said, hey, this is the direction we're going to go. Not proud of who the tool is we're going to use to get there, but this is where we're going to go. So, and I also knew that conservatives are close to the vest. They don't talk about things. They just don't. So that meant that there was a silent majority potentially brewing out there. So was I surprised? A little bit, but not necessarily shocked that Donald won. And in fact, if you look at some of the interesting stories around the world, I saw this one come up that record bets, big losses for bookies. Over in London, British bookies sustained the largest losses in the wake of a political race in history. Basically, the U.S. elections attracted more bets than any other political gamble ever in the U.K., with bookies estimating that around $250 million were put on wagers. This is in the Wall Street Journal. And, of course, political gambling is illegal in the U.S., but the bookies took a shellacking because the people over in Britain were voting or betting that Trump would get elected. And why wouldn't they? Because they were part of the Brexit, right? No one thought that was going to happen, and it happened. No one thought this was going to happen. At least in the media, they didn't think it was going to happen. But I'll tell you this. I was watching the political results roll in, and we all knew that the Todd Young race and Evan Bayh race was close, right? Well, it wasn't close at all. And when that happened, when I saw the gap in that area, I looked at my younger brother and said, this thing is going to get wild. And it did, and it did, and it did, and it did. So, again, and then we're going to talk with Rod in just a little bit. Then the market futures were selling off, right? Like down 800, only to finish today on Thursday. Record highs, it was up over 200. So it's funny how these things flip. And I was on Glass in the morning, and I said, listen, you know, don't do anything. It's going to be just fine. I mean, I was pretty passionate that morning, but I was going on like 4 hours sleep, so I don't even remember what I said. And then I asked Glass, hey, is that show anywhere or is that any place that I could listen to it? And he said, no, they don't record it. And I'm like, well, that's probably just as well. So it was a good, fun night. And you know what, guys? It is what it is. So we have this new political order. Hopefully things transition smoothly and we don't have anything wild happen, and we get some things done. I mean, that's what I'm hoping for sure happens. Hey, women, so let's talk about this first segment. It was brought to you by Class 101. FAFSA registrations for the 2017-18 school year is open now. Call Class 101 today and see how they can help you with this necessary headache. Call them at 812-320-3702 or go online to myclass101.com. And my son will actually be there tonight. For some reason, he goes to these classes. I don't really know what they do, but he'll be there right after wrestling practice, so I don't think they'll get a lot out of him, but good luck. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little about what I talked about last week. And if you missed the segment on debt, national debt, higher taxes, I really encourage you to go listen to that segment from last week's show. I'm gonna talk a little bit more about that when we come up in this next segment. And basically, you know, what no one has been talking about, and definitely is the elephant in the room. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Medicare premiums, where they're headed likely, and how someone's going to have to pay for this stuff. So we'll be back with that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Rod Holloway will be joining us in just a few minutes. All right, I'm not trying to sound like I'm moonlighting as a cage fighter here, but last week when I talked about taxes, I was pretty fired up, and then I just thought, you know what, I need to keep on this topic, because if I don't continue down this road, I'm not trying to be political. What I'm trying to do is help you protect yourself from higher taxes down the road. David Walker, former Comptroller of the United States, he said that tax rates would have to double to pay for the things that we have promised people that we just simply can't pay. We talked about Social Security and Medicare. You didn't even have to look any further past that to see the big problem. But we've got to talk about this, and then we have to talk about how you can get yourself into a much lower tax bracket into retirement. You know, amidst all the conversation about past statements people made, innuendos, fluffy talks on personal values, you know, no one ever really took a real stab in this presidential election debate process about the debt. I mean, they just kind of brushed by it. I mean, it's nearing $20 trillion in counting. The candidates passed right over this for the most part, claiming their programs wouldn't add to the totals. But that's really not my point. No one really spoke seriously about ending the deficit spending and also possibly paying down the debt that we owe. Deficit spending is simply, folks, that we're bringing in less money than we're spending, and we're bringing in more money today than we ever have in the history of our country, just so you know. But without that conversation, we're doomed at some point to watch our debt explode, and that's when someone's going to have to pay. And who's going to pay? The people with money. Now, it's not going to haunt us today because we have these low, low, low interest rates. In fact, I'm going to talk to Rod later about, now that Donald's in, he's the master of using debt and leverage, right, to build a real estate empire. Why would you not go out and issue a 100-year bond at 3.5%? Now you know your fixed interest cost for the next 100 years or 50 years, and then you can work on it. We've seen it done in other countries. We've seen, I think it was Australia, issued a 70- or 80-year piece of paper recently. And just think about this. The 2020s are just around the corner, and with the new decade, we're likely to enter an era of normalized interest rates, which would cause our annual interest costs to soar as part of our national debt. And that crowds out all the other spending. You know, we talked about it last week that it could get to the point where most of our budget is being spent on interest on the national debt, and then we'd only have, like, you know, 8% of our budget left to take care of all the other things out there, and that's just not even impossible. So as the Donald takes the oath of office, I still laugh when I say it, as the 45th president of the United States early next year, he will preside over an expected budget deficit just over $500 billion, and then that's going to push us over $20 trillion total. Social Security, you know, they actually own about $5 trillion of government debt, which they have been unloading. Social Security, because they're paying out more than what's obviously being pushed in. I think last week we mentioned that when Social Security first started, there were like 40-some people to one, 40 people paying into one, taking out. Now it's 3-1. It's going to go to 2-1 in the next decade. So we have that problem looming. So I'm just saying that if you don't understand that someone has to pay this eventually, and that the number one spot they can get your money is in retirement accounts, you need to start doing some things now. You need to start having Roth conversion strategies. You need to start leveraging probably one of the most protected tax codes of all time, and probably always will be, Section 7702. It's the cash value and tax-free treatment of life insurance, utilizing that. You know, tax-free bonds, great, but they're not really totally tax-free, because the interest goes into the calculation, which determines how much of your Social Security is taxed. And then we talk about, you know, Medicare. Medicare trust fund's a mess. Well, we really don't know the final numbers yet. We know that Medicare costs are going to be going up pretty dramatically in 2017. The June Medicare Trustees Report, they project a 22% increase on Medicare Part B premiums are needed to balance the Medicare Part B trust fund in 2017. So that basically translates into a current premium of $122 a month is going to go to $149. So if you're married, that's $300 a month for Medicare Part B. Remember, just a few years ago, it was like $105, then went to $115, $122, now $149. But that's only going to affect, we figured out, about 30% of Medicare beneficiaries. Why? Because Medicare has a hold harmless plan, whatever you want to call it, provision, that comes into play in the face of low Social Security cost of living increases. So what they say is that your Medicare premiums cannot go up any more than what your Social Security payments do. So in this case, we're seeing a Social Security increase of 0.3%. So we're not going to see Medicare premiums increase any more than what your Social Security is. If we continue down this road, all the new people coming in are going to pay a bigger portion of Medicare. So like next year, let's say it has to go to 160 or 170, and we have a very low cost of living increase on Social Security, you may still be paying like 120. So the gap of new people coming in to old people staying in may continue to widen and widen and widen. So you probably need to be thinking about this and paying attention to it. And don't forget that that's if you married filing jointly or bringing in less than $85,000 a year. You get up to 107, you're doubling that. You go over to 160 in provisional income, you're at $4,000 for one person for Medicare Part B premiums. That's $8,000 for the couple. So all I'm saying, folks, is that understand the math, right? Because that's the dirty little four-letter word behind all this. It's not anything else. It's just simply math. That if you don't think taxes are going to be higher in the future, you're either not paying attention, and that's really what I'm trying to help you with here, or you're really bad at math. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Hot Rod Holloway will be joining us, the equity portfolio manager over at CFCI, to talk about this wild ride that we've been on since the announcement of President-elect Donald Trump and where we're going from here. Interest rates, by and large, have gone up, so we're going to talk to Hot Rod about that as well. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. All right, welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Thank you for hanging out with me. Of course, you can always catch the show on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on WGCORadio.com, on Google Play Music, iTunes. You have no excuse not to listen. And what's good is you don't have to listen to all of it. You can just listen to some of it. And like I said last week when we talked about the excerpts from the book The Power of Zero, how to get into the 0% tax bracket and transform your retirement, you should listen to that segment. That right there will give you the reference points that you need to figure out how to create some tax diversification in retirement, not just investment diversification. All right, mentioning investments, the portfolio manager of CFCI and frequent caller to the Glass in the Morning Show, Hot Rod Holloway, joins me now. And Rod, we were texting back and forth on Tuesday night as the election results were rolling in, and I think that my last one was, wow, this is really unbelievable how it was unfolding. But what was even more unbelievable was the massive swing in the attitude of the market. My goodness, that night it was an 800-point future down, and I think we ended up the next day or whatever, and we ended a new record high today. I mean, it's the market or investors seem to have a little schizophrenia or something going on.
Yeah, most certainly it's kind of crazy. I mean, we've been saying for quite some time that, a Hillary Clinton win wouldn't have a huge impact on the market because the market had kind of priced that in, and the market felt as though it had some certainty in what a Hillary Clinton presidency would bring. Said many a times on Glass's show that you have to understand the market is not giving you a stamp of approval of any politician's ideas because it goes up, nor is it telling you it's a bad plan by a politician if it goes down. It's really based more on how comfortable it feels with the certainty of potential outcomes from those. So we felt as though that was going to happen. The other thing we thought would happen is that, hey, if we were surprised and Donald did end up pulling this thing off and won, that there was probably going to be a pretty good sell-off, at least for a few days, similar to Brexit, mm-hmm. is kind of how we put it, that the uncertainty of what a Donald Trump presidency brings would potentially cause the market to sell off. Lo and behold, the closer he came to getting the the magic electoral vote number that he was chasing, the further that the after-hours market sank, to the point of the Dow Jones being down roughly 800 points at one point in the middle of the night or the wee hours of the morning. What's much harder to explain is how in the heck, in such a short amount of time from 2 or so in the morning until the next morning, and then by the end of the day, that it completely changed. Because, yeah, as you alluded to, I think by about opening bell, the futures market were showing the Dow down about 188 points. So it did open down. But, yeah, as the day wore on, you ended up positive. Not only positive, you had a pretty strong rally on Wednesday. So I can't imagine that everybody out there with dollars in the marketplace suddenly dove into Trump's economic plan and had a complete change of heart. So it's kind of hard to explain exactly what potentially caused such a rapid swing from the middle of the night to where you ended up at the close the next day. And anytime you're dealing with pre- or post-market trading, it can always be really difficult to really read into that what the real market is going to do. And the reason for that is it's a very thinly traded market before and after the official opening and closing of the market, meaning there just aren't a lot of people that are trading in that time. Number one, you have to get some special permission from your wherever, if you have an online account or if you go through an advisor, the advisor would have to get that permission to go out and trade. A lot of people just don't even bother to do that. They take care of their investing during the day. So sometimes you do get some really rapid swings that are more directly due to the fact that it is so thinly traded. And if you've only got 20 people trading in the futures market and 19 of you are selling, well, you're probably going to go down quite a bit. The real market opens, and obviously you have a lot more players involved. So you get a lot better balance between the sellers and the buyers that even things out a little bit.
I thought it was interesting to see the individual companies and sectors swing so dramatically in the day following as well. I mean, the industries that feel like less regulation, boom, were way up. Those that felt like that they would do better under a Clinton presidency were down. So that was, as you peel back the onion layers, that seemed to be pretty interesting to watch as well.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, healthcare was a big one of those where healthcare had just really been hammered here in the last 2 weeks to a month because everyone felt as though the Dems were going to be much harsher on the healthcare and the drug pricing and the increasing of drug prices. That is a bit of a bipartisan thing out there in which it's not just the Dems that are concerned about that. The Republicans are as well. I think the thought process on the healthcare is that it's probably way oversold from the Republican aspect and that the Republicans may want to go after that and make some legislative changes to affect the gouging of prices by some companies. And I say gouging, that's the take of some congressmen, although as an outsider looking in, it's hard not to agree when you see with some of those price increases. But yeah, financials is a big one, looking at financials saying, okay, hey, we may not have as big of a bullseye on our back with a Trump presidency and also a Republican Congress as what we would have had a Democrat, especially if the Democrats would have been able to pull off a sweep themselves. Then that really would have put Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders in play, and there's no doubt that they have waged a war on financial institutions. So, yeah, I think twofold financials. One, a little less regulation, a little more friendly administration. And then secondarily, as things continue to show that they are improving, a rate increase in December seeming very likely, mm-hmm. and increased interest rates helps the banks make a little bit of money on the spread between what they pay versus what they pay out. So that is the other impact on the financial institutions. But yeah, there's no doubt that you saw a definite difference in sectors and how they react Wednesday versus the few days before.
Rod Holloway is speaking with us. He is the equity portfolio manager over at our office, CFCIO, supervises a lot of different accounts. and helps me answer a lot of questions to concerned people. So, Rod, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how stocks tend to rise in the year before a presidential election, but then slow down in the year that follows. This came from a really cool Wall Street Journal article. And then we're going to also give you some real good information that you may be able to go and apply to your own personal situation, because we've actually seen interest rates spike pretty quickly here on the 10-year Treasury. What does that mean to bond prices? Where should you think about or possibly want to shift some of those dollars to preserve and protect what you have? So we'll come back. We'll talk about that and more. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Yeah, we hit these new highs recently, and, you know, it seemed like all's good in the world again, just like that. People get so freaked out about that, and I was just always, just like Rod, trying to be the voice of reason to say, do not make investment decisions based on the outcome of this election. But you might want to make a few, and we mentioned that earlier about some of the different sectors that could benefit from lower regulation and whatnot. But, Rod, I read a good Wall Street Journal article, and, of course, I left it back at the office, so that's real helpful to me. The stocks tend to rise in the year before a presidential election, but then tend to slow in the year that follows. And I know we've never been big fans of using that as an indicator of what's going to happen in the future, but it's hard to argue with those statistics.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there are a lot of trends like that you see. There are some, especially in those types of trends.
Let me ask you one quick question.
Sure.
What's the trend of the market after the Cubs win the World Series?
Yeah.
You have to go back, what, about 100 years to know that?
Nobody really knows that one. So we're living that one in real time right now.
Yeah, perfect.
Back to the original question. You know, the seasonal thing, the sell in May and go away and stuff like that, we most certainly say, hey, you know, yeah, there's a random pattern here, but I don't know that it's worth investing in, because there's not necessarily a real rhyme or reason to that. Some of the other things, such as the presidential election, you know, there can be some explain. You know, the last year of that election, or that president cycle and getting ready for the election, you know, you've got that uncertainty of what the new president is going to potentially do. You know, I don't know that many of our elections have been what we thought was clear-cut as this one. And, of course, everybody was shocked when the result came out. But I think most people thought pretty clear-cut. We knew who the winner was going to be. Most others, it's a little closer, so it's harder to plan ahead of time. Plus, of course, in the last year of the president, he's probably not going to get a whole lot of things accomplished. So, you know, there are some things maybe that need to be done that you know aren't going to get done and cause that kind of flat market. Mm-hmm. You know, now I think that's another reason why we had a bit of a rally in the after effect, is I think it's not just a Trump win. And as I said before, the market rallying is not an indication that it loves Trump's plan. But for some reason, the market came to a conclusion that there is a little bit of certainty. But I think a little bit more importantly is that with the Republicans being across the board, that you probably are going to get some things done. And unfortunately, that's been part of it. We haven't gotten anything done for quite a while. So this market has really been driven on interest rates and mm-hmm. the Fed. And now I think it's time that fiscal has to step in. And I say it's time. The time was a while back that we should have had some fiscal involvement in the economy to help things improve. You even heard that out of Fed Chairman Greenspan before he stepped down, that we needed some fiscal plans involved to help the economy. You heard it out of Yellen. So that's been known. But now I think that people feel as though, okay, you're probably going to get some things done. Even for the other side, it may not be exactly what you want done, but getting some positive steps moving us forward, even if it's only a half a step forward, is extremely important, because the Fed has done all that they can do to help the economy out.
Out of bullets.
The Fed cannot create demand
simply
because they have low interest rates.
So, Rod, I think last Friday before the election, the jobs report came out, and I'm almost thinking, well, no one even paid any attention to it because they were all focused on the election. And then now they're like, oh, you know what? The unemployment rate actually dropped, and now we're only 0.1% above the Fed's target unemployment rate. And, oh, by the way, we added 161 jobs. And oh, by the way, hourly earnings also increased. I mean, that's a big deal. And people left their jobs at a higher rate than they have since 2007 voluntarily, which means that people are more confident they're able to find new jobs or retire. So as you think about this plow horse economy that's been adding a few new jobs here and there at a slow and steady pace for quite some time, we've almost reached the benchmark of the unemployment rate the Fed was looking for, which was a silly mandate in the first place that they were given. It's like, who can we have try to make this happen? Okay, Fed, you can do that too. But people are finally starting to see their wages increase because there's wage pressure. And that then takes away the fear of deflation. You and I talked about this today, that I think the discussion on deflation is probably dead, and that now we start talking about inflation, which gives the Fed the opportunity and reason that they can start increasing rates as early as December. And I think they'll probably do it a couple more times in 2017, but we'll have to see. But two things I wanted to talk about before I let you go. One is back on big economy stuff. So government spending accounts for about 20% of GDP. About 70% of GDP is based on consumer spending. So I'm just saying, folks, that we may see a business person in office that takes a longer view than whether or not they can get reelected in 4 years. What I mean by that, when you buy a piece of real estate, when you invest in ideas and things in your business, you don't look at what this is going to do for me next week. You look at what it's going to do for me in the next decade. So when I think about what could happen with lower government spending down the road, because we're going to have that to cut into this thing, that could hurt GDP, which could hurt the economy. So I'm just saying, folks, that sometimes you have to puke a little bit to feel better. And this could feel like a little bit of a puke job over the next few years, but I don't know. I'm just saying that if this does happen, don't freak out. It's just part of the process to make, you know, a little bit of pain now for a lot of gain later. So, Rod, let's talk about these rising interest rates. When interest rates go up, bond values go down. We've seen that just in the last week. The 10-year Treasury jumped up, I think I saw it today, over 2.1 or 2.1. I mean, it was up. And we were down as low as like 1.5, 1.6 not too long ago. So that's a monster move in the 10-year, which makes your mortgage rates next week, by the way, higher. So hopefully you locked in that refinance this past week or the week before. But it causes bond values to go down. And if that trend continues and we do get into more normalized rates in, let's say, the next 4 or 5 years, where the 10-year could be at 4%, bond values are going to go down. So let's talk just briefly about how a person could potentially protect themselves from that phenomenon of bond values dropping, maybe some different areas they could shift to, some ideas in their 401ks, like possibly utilizing some of the stable value funds that many of the 401k plans now have, which would keep you, they're not going to make much interest, but you shouldn't lose any on the principal. So, Rod, take that one and run with it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the first thing that you have to do is evaluate why you own the bonds to begin with. If you own the bonds for principal protection, for income, then don't get too caught up in the fluctuation of the price of the bond based on interest rate movements, because the interest payment continues to come twice a year regardless of the price of the bond. It doesn't get affected because the bond goes up or goes down. They told you we're going to pay you 4.5% per year, and we're going to give that to you in two payments every single year. That continues the same. The other thing, from a principal protection perspective, bonds, differently than stocks, mutual funds, ETFs, whatever, they have a maturity date. So as long as credit quality is okay, you get to that maturity date, you get your par value back. You don't get that with stocks. Now, if you're doing it just because you're still in accumulation phase and you don't want to take on too much risk and you want a well-balanced portfolio so you're not 100% equities because maybe retirement's only 7 or 8 years away, you don't have to have the principal protection, and you don't have to generate the income, then, yeah, there are other areas you can look. Senior floating rate, that's an area. Those are short-term corporate loans that reset every 60 to 90 days. So as interest rates begin to go up, those floating rates get adjusted every 60 to 90 days. So they don't have the same inverse correlation to rates going up and the values of those senior loan funds or bonds going down. That's an area. You can look at convertible income, convertibles. They're tied a little bit to the equity market. They pay a smaller dividend, but if stocks are appreciating and we have a growing economy, then what ends up happening with those convertibles, there's a certain price that once that's obtained, you can then convert that convertible bond into an actual equity ownership position. So that's another area to where it's not going to necessarily have the inverse relationship, interest rates going up and the value automatically going down because of their link to the equity side. Preferred, maybe a little bit along that same line. The difficulty with preferreds, one day a preferred looks like a stock,
yep.
One day a preferred looks like a bond, so it can always be hard to tell. There are times, especially if it's a perpetual preferred, meaning there is no maturity date, sometimes those things can get volatile during rising interest rate environments. And then the other one you mentioned, the stable value type funds, especially in 401ks, many of them have them. They don't pay a whole heck of a lot. You maybe get 1%. You may even only get a half a percent. But if all you're worried about is maintaining some of what you have without being 100% equity, then there's nothing wrong with parking dollars there right now. The reality is, if you're in bonds for appreciation, not the income, that day is probably ending soon. Now, of course, people have been claiming that for the last few years, and it hasn't happened yet. We're still in a bond bull market that's been going on for close to 30 years, but it is going to end. I'm not about to predict exactly when that's going to happen, but it is going to end. So you have to understand, if you're owning bonds for appreciation, that game is very close to the end, if it hasn't already ended, because as you alluded, the 10-year had a pretty big move just within the last month of going from around 160, 170 to 2.13 was the last I saw today. I don't know if that's where it's close, but that's a big move for a 10-year treasury in this short amount of time, which creates volatility in bonds, and people typically aren't used to seeing volatility in the bond world.
Who is the number one owner of our national debt? It's our own U.S. government. And I'm telling you folks right now that if a guy that understands leverage the way that Donald Trump does, doesn't propose a long-term bond, and I'm talking 50, 80, 100 years bond, that it could be sold at a 3.5% or 4% clip, and now you know your fixed interest cost for the next 50 to 100 years, now you have some time to work on some things. Don't be surprised if that doesn't get proposed at some point. Hot Rod, great job as always. We'll see you at the ranch in the morning, and more importantly, we'll get to hear you on Glass in the Morning tomorrow morning, 7:20 sharp.
Sounds good, David. Have a great show, and I'll see you tomorrow morning.
All right, man. Let's take a break, guys. When we come back, some great questions of the week. Had one here that I thought was just, you know, something seems so obvious to me, but yet people asked the questions, which mean that maybe other people have the same question. And this one was, when I move to Florida after I retire, is the money that I take out taxable since it was saved here in Indiana while I was working? And they're asking this because the state of Florida has no state income tax. So we'll start off with that. We have three or four more after that. If we can get to them, I hope we can. This is Your Money with David Hayes. What's your single biggest expense going to be in retirement? I said it last week. I'll say it again. It's going to be taxes. No question about it. Every time you take a dollar out of that retirement account, you owe the tax man. The bigger the retirement account is, the more you owe the tax man. You never can get away from it. People will say to me, oh, it's health care. It's this. Yes, it's all that, but it's taxes. Go back and listen to the segment last week as we took an excerpt from the book, The Power of Zero, by my friend Dave McKnight. He's going to be on the show at some point. I shot him a email just today, and we're going to try to get something worked out. Pretty powerful stuff, kind of motivates you to work on getting yourself to a lower tax bracket, maybe even zero tax bracket in retirement. So the question, the first one comes directly out of the tax book. He says to me, if I move to Florida, who has no state income tax, is the money I take out of my IRA taxable since I made it here in Indiana? Well, you're going to pay federal income tax. There's no question about that. You can't avoid it. But you will not pay any Florida state tax. So it doesn't matter where you accumulated the dollars, it's where you are when you take the money out. So we have a few states like that where there are no state income taxes. Pretty good place to hang out if most of your money is coming out of a retirement account. Here's another one. I want to give my kids some money at Christmas time. What is the most I can give without having to pay taxes? And is it a good idea to split the money to give some to my son and some to my daughter-in-law rather than just to one person? Okay, this is one that people always get tripped up on. So the way the rules work is if you give more than, I think it's $14,000 to any one person, then you have to file what's called a gift tax return. What's a gift tax return? A gift tax return is an informational form only. No one pays any taxes. You don't pay it. The recipient doesn't pay it. and it simply says that I gave more than $14,000 to producer Jim. And if I gave more than that, then the excess simply goes against my lifetime gift exclusion amount. So currently, that lifetime gift exclusion amount sits around $5.4 million. That's with an M, million. So here's how this works. I give $114,000 to Jim. The first $14,000 is, quote, free. The next $100,000 goes against my $5.4 million. So now I only have $5.3 left to give. So my point is that if you don't have a $5 million estate, 10 if you're married, then you can give away whatever you want. And it just simply reduces that lifetime gift exclusion amount down. It's no big deal. People always get tripped up on this. Now, if you don't want to go through the hassle of filing a gift tax return, yeah, give, and you want to give $28,000, give $14,000 to your daughter, or if, I'm sorry, $14,000 to your son, $14,000 to your daughter-in-law, and they'll be very happy for it. All right, last week they said, I mentioned, and then I've already talked about this, I had a really good spot on taxes and how to get into a lower tax bracket in retirement. But I also talked about how a person could sell stock and pay no taxes if they were in a certain bracket, tax bracket. Can you go over that again? Yeah, so right now if you're married filing jointly and you make your taxable income is under like $77,000, $78,000, you're in the 15% tax bracket. Now that's after you take your standard deduction and your personal exemptions off. That's how you get to your taxable income. So you could have $100,000 gross income, take off these deductions and get down to 70 something. So here's the thing, anything under 77 or whatever, 78,000, you're in the 15% tax bracket. You can sell an appreciated asset and pay no capital gains taxes at all, zero. So as an example, let's say my taxable income was 60 grand and my limit was 78,000. So I have $18,000 of room that I can use. And I would do this for a Roth conversion. You just cannot give up that free gift card of 15% or 10% or whatever tax bracket you're in. You need to use it all up. Don't waste it, because if you don't use it, you'll lose it the next year. So you could sell whatever stock it is that you have a lot of appreciation on and have up to $17,000-$18,000 of gain and pay no capital gains tax. You will pay Indiana state tax and local tax on that, so don't forget that. But that's how it works. Actually, pretty slick deal. I'm always this time of year looking over tax returns, flipping to page 2. What was your taxable income? Anything changed this year? All right, man, let's take advantage of it. So this is the time of year that we do a lot of that. And don't forget, if you haven't, let's say, a Roth conversion plan in place to lower your taxes in the future, and you have an unintended consequence come up. Maybe you end up making more than you thought, so you end up paying more tax than you thought. Or maybe your Medicare premiums went up because you didn't think about this or that or the other. Or maybe the investment tanked. That's a good reason. That's the greatest do-over available in the tax code is the Roth recharacterization. You can do it up until October of the year following the conversion. So I convert 10 grand over to something, and it tanks. It goes to 5 grand. Well, I can recharacterize that like it never happened and then redo the Roth conversion at the lower amount, and away we go. So that's a really, you cannot give up on these tax brackets. To me, this is the number one thing people need to be doing on an annual basis to make sure you're taking advantage. They have in-plan Roth conversions, all kinds of stuff like that. All right, let's see if we have time for one more. Have some money to invest. Should I do it now or wait until the first of the year? Well, it depends what you're asking me for, if you're worried about the markets or whatever. But I always say the best time to invest is when you have the money, not necessarily waiting until the first of the year. But if you have it, you can invest. The only thing I would tell you to be cautious of are mutual funds this time of year distribute their capital gains. Okay, so what that means is a fund you own with me and everybody else. So that fund manager has been buying and selling securities for a long, long time, hopefully at a gain. Well, at the end of the year, they have to distribute 90% of this to the shareholders. So I could buy a fund today and in a month have lost money on it, let's say. But then I'm looking at what fund now that's going to distribute 4% of the value out as a capital gain, and I have to pay taxes on that, even though I've only owned it for a month. So it's possible that you could go into a fund, lose money, and pay taxes. And that's what you call a double whammy right there. So I'm just saying, be careful when you go into funds, because you want to ask them, what is the estimate of your capital gain distributions for this year? Most of them are starting to come out now and they're available. So you want it to be zero or very, very low. And if it's a high one and you want to still invest in that fund, wait until the distribution's done. You're going to be able to go in at that point at a lower price and not worry so much about it. Makes sense? Hope it did. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll preview next week's show as well. And let's see, I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's about it. We got a few more minutes when we come back. So we'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. I was sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't write down what next week's show is, but it came to me that we are only 2 weeks from Thanksgiving. My goodness, which basically means, folks, that our annual gift-giving show will be next week because then we will replay it on Thanksgiving Day while we're all laying around eating turkey, watching football, enjoying family and friends. So, yeah, man, it's here before you know it, isn't it? And here it is, the middle, the end of November. So that'll be a show. If you've never heard that show before, what we try to do is introduce some gift-giving ideas to you that have a financial thread through them that you can give at Christmas time to people that would benefit from your generosity. So we have a bunch of them lined up. We try not to bury in books and publications. That's kind of boring. But we try to give you some fun stuff for kids and for older people, for maybe new graduates coming right out of college. I mean, so we'll go through that and hope you'll enjoy it. We won't do the entire show of gift giving, but we should be able to fill up a solid, you know, 2 or 3 segments with just that for sure. Don't forget to visit Class 101. FAFSA registrations for the 2017-2018 school year are now open. Class 101, to call them today and see how they can help you with this necessary headache. They're over at 812-320-3702 or go online to myclass101.com. And I'm looking at the calendar right now, or the clock, and my son is at Class 101 right now. So at least he should be. I hope he is. So I hope everyone enjoyed the show. I'm going to stay on this tax thing because I can't beat this horse enough that your biggest expense in retirement is taxes. How can you do things today to put yourself into a much lower tax bracket in the future? So if taxes do go up or forced distributions to retirement accounts happen, now you can actually do something about it by controlling the right levers of the retirement distribution strategy. So I'm just saying that next week I may not hit it as hard, but don't be surprised if you're like, man, Hayes is talking about taxes again, because I think it's so important that everybody hears the story, everybody knows the tools that are available, and they act on it now and don't wait till later. Because just like everything else, folks, the bigger that IRA gets, the bigger your partner gets, and your partner is the IRS. All right, everybody, enjoyed the show, I hope. We'll talk to you again next week as we do the gift-giving show. This has been Your Money with David Hayes. Goodbye. The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.